You're listening to the General Geekery Podcast.
Welcome to episode 18, I believe, of General Geekery. With me, as always, is JD.
Hello.
And somewhere in the background is probably Jimbo.
Our, I do?
Yeah, there he is. He's there. Our sometimes usual regular co-host. And we have a great episode tonight because we were able to get Benson Yee of Ben's World of Transformers as a guest tonight. Welcome, Ben. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me on.
This is quite an honor. I follow your site religiously because, well, I'm kind of a novice level Transformers fan. I mean, I've always kind of liked it, but as I've gotten older, I'm getting more into it, and I've realized when I go to sites like yours and Sabertron, how completely out of my depth I actually am. So I look to experts for information that I'm unaware of. And there's quite a lot of it. Every time I go to TF Wiki, boy, that's a rabbit hole that it's hard to climb out of once down there.
Absolutely. They do an amazing job.
They do.
Yes, they do. They're on top of everything.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, we've long been wanting to do a Transformer Spotlight episode of the show, but we weren't going to do it unless we had somebody that could be a certified expert at it. And then you agreed to be on the show. I'm like, oh my God, this is perfect. So
it's been harder to get somebody on than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Well, not everybody's up for doing podcasts. So, but yeah, Ben, thanks for joining us. This is quite awesome.
Yeah, sure thing. And, you know, I can't promise I won't have to Google a thing or two, but
that's what we do.
I'm happy to talk about whatever's on your mind.
You know what? If you're Googling stuff, then I feel better because you could end up bringing up character names, and I'm like, never heard of them. I mean, just today, I was looking at the announcements of the next waves of the Titans Return. I'm like, I have to look up half of these guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell is a Repugnus?
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty badass when I looked him up. But
so what the hell is he?
Well, he's a bug guy, and you love those. So
I love the bug guys.
Well, you know, here's the thing that fascinates me about the Transformers line. It's never gone away. They start a new thing, and they bring familiar characters in, and from series to series, they might drastically change shape, change form, change personality, change gender, but it's always an active property.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's never really taken a break like some of the bigger properties like G.I. Joe has or Marvel.
I mean, even after, all right, here in the U.S., we got Transformers the movie, and then there was season 3 of the TV show, and then I think it kind of dropped off here, but like the G1 cartoon just kept on going over in Japan, right?
Right, so Generation 1, the original series of Transformers most people remember from the 80s, pretty much ended with a very truncated season 4. Which consisted of 3 episodes, a miniseries called The Rebirth. That introduced the Headmasters and Target Masters, among many other characters. And then that was it. That's all we got, and it ended for us. Now, that doesn't mean there weren't any TV shows for Transformers on after that, but what essentially they did was they just took the old episodes and they recycled them as Generation 2. They added some very rudimentary CG effects to them, some sound effects and so on, and they just tried to sell it as a new show, while the toy line was just a lot of recolored figures from the original series with some new ones sprinkled in. And then later on it became mostly new ones, but it was this really, you could tell it was an effort where they were struggling with limited budget to bring the line back and make it as successful as it was before. And Hasbro has spoken on this before, not the current Hasbro staff, but the staff from back then have said that the reason there wasn't any more new animation at that time was simply they didn't have budget for it anymore. Yeah. They were no longer being given funds to create a new cartoon, so they had to make do with what they had. Those were some pretty dark times for the line in the U.S., North America. But you're right. Meanwhile, in Europe and Japan, the line continued to thrive. So at some point, for the last 30-something odd years, somewhere in the world, there were Transformers on shelves, and that's an extraordinary thing.
See, when I was a kid, I did watch season 3 of the Transformers, and I remember that it drove me. I understood on some level that there were a lot of famous actors that provided voices in the movie, but I don't think I quite understood the significance of that, because I remember when I watched the new season of the TV show, and most of those actors had been replaced by other actors. Mm-hmm. I remember being particularly bothered by Galvatron's new voice and Hot Rod's new voice. But I didn't even realize that there was anything after that. And then the last toys that I can remember seeing in the stores were the Action Masters, which were a bunch of awesome characters. They were just little Joe-sized Transformers that did not transform. But I think I had all of them, and to this day, I'm a huge fan of Banzaitron because of that line. and it's funny because I'm a character guy, so I'm not one that gets hung up on their vehicle mode or their monster mode or whatever. I'm not one that's, as long as the robot for me looks good, I'm okay with whatever the alternate form is. But when I was a kid, I got the Action Masters. I'm like, oh, I don't have to worry about the other set because I got my robots. But I remember, once I started looking at Transformers stuff online, I was completely fascinated to find out that the Generation 1 cartoon basically just kept going in Japan, and it went, and I mean, I remember reading about things like Super God Master Force. I'm like, what in the hell is that? But, so, did they have Generation 2 over there, or was it all just a continuation of the original stuff? I'm not sure.
They had Generation 2 as toys. They never got the aforementioned semi-recycled animation with CG effects, as far as I know, and I'm happy to be wrong on that, but I don't recall any Japanese version of that. But they did have plenty of Generation 2 action figures. The packaging was different than ours, of course, but it was the Generation 2 brand. There's even a, I believe it was a Botcon exclusive poster that I own that was G2 based, that was exclusive to Japan. So the line existed there, but very briefly. I mean, I think, keep in mind for them, when they started rolling out Generation 2 toys, Generation 1 was not as distant of a memory for them as it was for folks in North America.
Yeah, because I was going to say, what was the break between Generation 1 here and Generation 2? Like, was it 2 years, 3 years, four years?
No. It was actually, I think it was somewhere in the range of 9 to 12 months. So it wasn't
really?
That long. But there was a time frame where there were no Transformers on shelves, very briefly. And then they kind of came back with a vengeance.
Here's one that, because, and it's just now that I'm looking into some of this some of the toy line aspect over in Japan, and I am completely fascinated by how many characters they get over there that they don't. I mean, figures and characters that they don't get here. Like, it seems to me, like Takara, everything that they do here, Takara does it too. Sometimes with different paint schemes,
but then they've got
this other stuff too. Now, I just got. I went on TF Source. I made my first order from there. They had a clearance thing going, and there's a Transformers Go. All right, I'm going to try to pronounce this. Gekisomaru. It's like a lion samurai guy. I had to get it. I'm like, that is completely badass, and I need that. I'm like, I need that in my life. Right. So, but that's just like one character of like, it seems to me like there's hundreds of characters that exist over there that don't exist here. How is that? I guess I'm fascinated too that there's collectors that actually buy both lines. Like they import the Takara stuff and they buy the domestic stuff. I'm like, wow,
you're talking to one of
them. exactly. I'm like, if only I had that kind of cash for one. Transformers, while it took small breaks here and there in the U.S., it really just never went away in Japan, right?
No, in Japan, it has been a consistent engine of industry for Takara Tomy for quite some time now. It's never really fully gone away, even when the line kind of dwindled. Don't get me wrong, there was a time where even Generation 1 was dying down in Japan, where once upon a time, 1 year of Transformers toys could have 20 to 40-odd figures. There were times when we essentially had maybe a few dozen MicroMasters and a handful of big guys, and that was the whole line. There were years that came out where the Decepticon presence was virtually non-existent. You know, you only had like maybe five or six Decepticons in a whole year. So things got lean in Japan, and they had to do some rewiring of the Transformers machine to keep it going. But that's the amazing thing about the line, isn't it? That it has had those lulls, but it's never fully died. And in the last, I would argue, 10 to 15 years, it has just surged back stronger and stronger every year. I think we look at, you know, the life of a toy line and a media as a bell curve, we're definitely still on the upward swing, I think.
I think a lot of it has to do with the movies and combined with the nostalgia effect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the time is right, right? So all of us who grew up with the original series in the 80s, we're now at the point in our lives where a lot of us have professional jobs, you know, we have our families, we have our homes, so we're doing our thing now, right? Because before, when we were kids, you depended on your relatives or your parents or your friends, you know, birthday parties to bring you a Transformer, right? You didn't have your own income to do it. Now we have it, and we've matured as a fandom to that level where we can say, I have some disposable income, I'm going to put a certain amount aside for this hobby. That simply didn't exist, say, 25 years ago.
No.
Now it does. And you're right. You made the point about the live-action movies. They suffer a huge amount of criticism. In some cases, I understand that criticism. But the one thing you cannot deny is that they are financially successful.
Agreed.
And
they're critic-proof. It doesn't matter how badly the critics pan the movies, like, it doesn't matter what the Rotten Tomatoes score is, they are bulletproof at the box office. Nothing can hurt them, it seems like.
You just don't see that with anything else.
No, there's no such thing, because there are movies that make a lot of money, despite what the critics say, but there are no other series of movies that continue to perform and perform in some, and in most of the cases, that it outperforms
DC.
Exactly. But every new movie outperforms the last one, despite what the critics say. It's absolutely amazing to watch. I mean, I understand a lot of the criticisms, and I understand why a lot of diehard fans that go back to the beginning, maybe they really just can't, even if they see it, they can't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan. I am a shameless fan of the Michael Bay movies, but I'm in some aspects of Transformers, I'm a fan of a little bit of all of it. Sure. The one subject that I honestly cannot speak on at all was Beast Wars. The whole thing passed me by when it was on TV and right. in the stores. It was at a time where G.I. Joe was on its lull too. So, and it was, I want to say, I think it was before the Star Wars line came back. So there was a few years there where I didn't go into stores at all. But so that whole thing bypassed me. And a couple years ago, I was getting ready to finally watch Beast Wars on Netflix just before they pulled it. Oh. And I'm like, oh, come on. I'm like, all right, somebody out there did that on purpose.
Well, it has to be better than the... If you want an uncomfortable silence, we can always talk about the Kiss players.
What in sure. the hell are you talking about?
That's a whole podcast in itself.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So, all right, you know what? Here's a nagging question I've got. Now, in the vintage Transformers line in Japan, Optimus Prime was Convoy, right? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay, so who is Jinrai? I'm completely fascinated by it because it looks like Optimus Prime. Sure. He's got his coloring, but I've gotten the sense that he's not Optimus Prime.
He is not. He is a completely separate character. Okay. In the Master Force series, from which the character you're referring to, Jinrai, originates, he was actually a different Transformer altogether. Has nothing to do with Optimus Prime except for his design. And part of the reason, as it was explained to me, that he has that design is that the trailer that is part of that toy, which we knew as Power Master Optimus Prime in North America, was originally intended for Optimus Prime, or aka Convoy. So there's some, you know, very loose one line throwing away of, oh, well, since the trailer was meant for him, the cab kind of looks like him, and just go with it, guys, just go with it. it's you know what? It's a fun enough series if you're into it that you're kind of like, okay, you know what? For me, Transformers looking alike has never been a huge deal because they're machines. So for me, it would make sense that if you have a model of machine that works well in combat, why wouldn't you duplicate aspects of that?
I mean, we understand it. We're diehard Star Wars fans. I'm all about some Astromech droids.
Yeah,
There are literally no color schemes at this point that you can't imagine on an R2 unit because R2 units, now all the way through 8 movies and 2 television series and, you know, countless other media, that there's R2 units of literally every color combination.
Right.
And every sort of design variation, you know, different domes here, different feet there, but it's so from that aspect, I love that about the Transformers too, because I'm not one. I can easily see, like, again, I'm looking at pictures like the Takara toys, and I'm like, doesn't matter if they're the same character in 2 color schemes. It's easy enough just to give one a different name and say, you know, it's a completely different character. I was just wondering about Jinrai because the one of them that I just saw the news about, it's got the same color scheme. So I wasn't sure if Convoy had gotten renamed into Jinrai at some point, because there's that what is that thing they're soliciting right now? It's Jinrai, and then he's got the trailer that's, was it the God Bomber? I don't know. It's correct. Fascinating to me. It's not really a separate character, right? It's an extension of Jinrai, correct?
God Bomber is actually... It depends on how you define the word character.
Okay, is it like an artificial intelligence?
It would be an AI by Transformers standards, meaning it can do rudimentary things and so on, but it doesn't have a very distinctive personality, as you would imagine, say, an Ironhide or a Bumblebee would, right? It doesn't have one of those of its own. The whole purpose of the God Bomber armor is to break apart, and it combines with Jinrai to form a suit of armor, a rocket launcher over his shoulders. It's basically an enhancement. And if you think about Japanese toys going back to the late 70s, right, there is a lot of that archetype with Mecha, where
that's Jimbo's expertise.
Yep.
He's come on here and he's educated us on toy lines from Japan that go all the way back there, because again, that is stuff that's out of my wheelhouse. But Jimbo, he's more than educated us on some of that. So,
no pressure or nothing.
But yeah, you know, if you just look at a lot of the toys that come from, you know, that were eventually brought over to the U.S. just via the robot craze of the early 80s, there's a lot of that, you know, very basic small robot, then you stick a bigger thing on him, then you stick a bigger thing on that, then you buy some other toys and you slap them on top of that. You know, there's a lot of that even today in Japan. I mean, if you look at Transformers...
Yeah, Robotech, Gundam.
Yeah, exactly.
Votoms.
Transformers didn't really used to rely on that play pattern, but where it does happen, like God Bomber, for instance, it really sticks out. And I think fans were very excited about the announcement of the new God Bomber, because it's a fairly obscure part of Transformers history, unless you're a Transformers fan.
Well, so I'm buying it. I love it. My entire toy budget, if it cost me that month, I need one of those. Simply because, again, totally fascinated by it. It's just, it's one of those, I guess it's like the Lion Samurai. I'm like, yep, need it.
Right.
You know, it's just, and it'll be like everything else. I've got a universe that exists in my head, and it will get a role, and it'll get adapted into it. And it's just, I looked at it, I'm like, that is just something that I have to have that. I mean, you're also talking to diehard G.I. Joe fans, where I could consider myself an expert on it. But even with all that stuff, I've never been loyal to one time period or one theme, or I just, whatever I like gets adapted into my little headcanon, and it just, it takes on a life of its own. So yeah, Jinrai and God Bomber, totally need them.
Link up on the page, man. I want to see what you're talking about.
What's up?
Put put a link to whatever.
Oh, you're okay. Oh, all right. Well,
Ben, while he does that, let me ask you a question. Talked up as being an expert on 70s Japanese toy lines, I don't really think so.
You have been called out, I think.
Yeah, I've been called out.
Through the goblet.
The very, very, very first original Transformers that we got over here, a lot of those were repurposed and repackaged toys from other toy lines that had existed in Japan for several years, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was that line called? I just lost
when,
it.
When the Japanese market saw those, how did they react did they get those other things from like Diaclone and whatnot, which I saw has a revival this last year or so?
That's right.
They were already fans of Diaclone stuff and all the other lines and whatnot. And then did they get all of that stuff repackaged as Transformers as well, or were those characters just omitted from their line? I understand that, you know, the licensing that Hasbro went through may not have been the same as the Takara used over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they're, you're right. They definitely did not get everything. There are key pieces from the original, you know, far back series in Japan that might have come out as one thing from one company. Remember, they didn't just source from Takara; they sourced from other companies too. Yeah. So Japan might have gotten
The Insecticons,
But there were certain toys they may have gotten in Japan that we got, right, repainted and repackaged as Transformers, official Transformers product by Hasbro, that Japan may not have gotten because the licensing deal was different or the ownership of that particular thing was different. And the 80s was kind of a crazy time because you got to look at some other toy lines that came out around the same time that also repurposed sculpts from Japan. So there was a limited release of Diaclone as Diachrome in the U.S. I actually have a couple of those, and you know they were blue. They were in blue packaging, same toys, but like the infamous Black Ironhide, for instance. I have that one that came out for Diachrome in the U.S. And you know, you had examples like that where there was this concurrent release, and yet these things still sold because. Both in Japan and the U.S., I would argue, if it had a whiff of that robo-mecha-transforming robot thing at the time, there was a very good chance it was going to sell, whether it was a Hasbro transformer, a Takara Diaclone, a Microman figure. It kind of didn't matter back then because to a lot of people, especially the parents who were buying this, it was all just one big jumbled mess of robots. Right. So they flew off the shelves anyway.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at your link now, JD. Most
interesting. Yeah. it's awesome. Well, and then I'm looking at some of the Takara versions that they're putting out of, you know, the Titans Return counterparts. And some of these color schemes are just excellent. Like they're like Takara's blur is infinitely superior. I have the one here, but I kind of want that one instead. Not even so much that it looks more like what he did on the cartoon. I think the color pops better. I think the varied color palette, the contrast is just nicer than the overall just sort of a drab. Because the dark teal that we have on this one is nice on its own, but he doesn't have any other colors that really stand out.
Well, and I think the Takara, one of the nice things that they do is use a lot of metallic paints, which will look really nice on those figures.
Yeah, and keep in mind, to the kind of related to the previous question about who bought what and so on, keep in mind that Takara is going after a completely different market than Hasbro's, right? There is some overlap, meaning targeting the older collector, but for the most part, in the U.S., Hasbro is targeting kids, right? Well, they should. that's not a bad thing. That's just how the market works. Meanwhile, in Japan, for the most part, a lot of Transformers, especially from their version of Generations, which is called Legends, in their Legends line, they are absolutely going after us, you know, folks of our age, who remember Generation 1, who were around for that line, they are not going after, you know, seven-year-olds. And if you look at how the lines are segmented in the U.S. versus how they're segmented in Japan, that quickly becomes very obvious.
And does Takara have any, like, kid-oriented versions of the Transformers? Or
absolutely. Like, so what they've done is they've taken the toys that are part of the line we call Robots in Disguise, and they've repurposed them as a line called Adventure. And they have the animation over there and everything. You know, they have the same cartoon we have. They may rename a couple characters here and there. They do different decos, because even with the kid-centered line, they'll do more deco patterns on the figures, because they also know there are some collectors of such as myself, who of my age, who are going to go after those figures. So there is a kids-oriented line there, but by far, when you look at attention to detail, your masterpieces, your legends, that's where a lot of that attention goes to it. And Blur is actually a very good example of that.
I was thinking, I really want the Takara Brainstorm. It's a remold of Blur. I was noticing how much they're their shared vehicle forms remind me of the old PlayStation Wipeout. I want to build like a Transformers Wipeout.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Warriors Unite Baldagas. It looks like a different version of the Combaticons.
Correct. That is based off a series which was called Car Robots in Japan. That was also called Robots in Disguise in the U.S., but Robots in Disguise in the early 2000s, not the current one. In the U.S., that character was called Ruination.
Ah.
And he was just a retooled, recolored set of Combaticons from the original series. So they're just kind of following history.
Gotcha.
Now, Brian, he's a huge fan of the Combiners. So and in fact, when he brought it up a few years ago, because Brian, who's the one that got introduced and they had the Comic-Con version? I'm having a brain fart.
That was the Combaticons. There was the San Diego Comic.
Yeah.
San Diego Comic-Con.
The full, was it Bruticus?
Yeah,
he's
Bruticus.
The combined. Okay. Because I remember Brian was telling me about it, and I'm like, dude, honestly, I only had like the vaguest memory of what the Combiners were because I didn't have any of them. That was just not something that, I mean, I had the fair share of Transformers, but even my parents knew, you know, that G.I. Joe was you know,
Paramount.
It's where my bread and butter were. But there was a bunch of stuff that I did have, but absolutely none of the Combiners. So I mean, other than Devastator, who really, I think kind of everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember anybody beyond him, and I'm like, I'm looking at him like, oh, this is interesting. and then they launched a whole toy line about it, and I'm like, well, I can't keep up with this. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I had a lot of the Combiners when I was a kid, but I never had like the centerpiece, you know, the big robot. To make the Gestalt, I had like all of the aerial bots except Silverbolt, and I had a couple of the Combaticons, and it just, you know, but as
that,
yeah,
that,
as
a, that's kind of like a terrible joke that somebody played on.
Yeah,
but
you know, one of my all time favorite toys is the third party Combaticon, the Combaticon set that. The Bruticus. I mean, this thing's like almost 2.5 feet tall. It's a work of art.
I would say you had to rob a bank to buy that, though, didn't you?
No, I just worked overseas a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, the now what's the now the like the Combiners that they came up like Computron. And all that stuff. Did those characters show up on the, were they sort of widely known? Or I get the sense that the later release ones aren't as resonant, I guess, as the early stuff.
I had the Computron bike guy that looked like one of the Tron bikes. Get his name. So that's the only one I had. Yeah.
Afterburner, you said, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I was looking at... I know there was a third-party Computron, like, year before last that I was looking at. I didn't have the money for it at the time. It looked cool.
Well, Ben, do you do the third-party stuff, or do you stick with the official stuff?
I largely stick with the official stuff. I will tell you the third-party stuff I do buy, and this is just personal... preference, not judging anyone or not, you know, not telling anyone what to do. My personal preference is I don't purchase any third-party stuff that impinges on official IP. But I do love buying any third-party stuff that is original. So one of the examples I always cite is Fans Project. When they did their Glacial Lord set, I was all over that. And I think it's an amazing piece of work from marketing to design. It's that final product. I think they did a brilliant job on that. So
I am going to look that up.
Yeah. Yep. I need to know what that is.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that either, honestly.
Well, it didn't do well, unfortunately, partly because it's not based on any existing IP. They made it up. Glacial Lord is a set of five combiner figures that are designed to be a quote-unquote retro future, meaning they use some engineering from today's knowledge of toy making, but their design, they're blocky, they're chunky looking. They are made to look like toys that came out with the 80s Transformers, but we just never saw them on shelves.
Yeah.
So almost like Hasbro, you know, was going to make these and then they never did. And each one of them becomes an animal. And then the middle guy's a mammoth, and there's a saber-toothed cat, and you know they're all meant to be from the Ice Age.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So they all combine, and what's great is even though they have that 80s, you know, kind of like not very articulated look and everything, there are features they have which are kind of modern. So each character is actually a little guy who fits into a larger robot that transforms and becomes his head, which is a feature his chest and his head, which is a feature that was very similar to something the original Transformers had in Japan.
So how many characters make up the combined?
Five characters altogether.
Okay.
And what I thought is, and this is me speaking well of third parties, in case anyone thinks I don't think well of them, one of the most brilliant things about them, and I don't know if you guys are finding packaging images, they printed the packaging to look like it has wear on the corners.
That's intentional.
Yes.
Oh, and interesting. I was just looking at that thinking, wow, they picked a bad box to
That is actually printed onto it to look vintage.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That's clever.
And the leader, the mammoth, I don't know if you can find a picture of the box for that, his artwork is intentionally faded to look like it was in a window of a store.
Nice.
For many years. So the premise is that these were lost and now found classic Transformers, that they were just sitting in a store somewhere or a warehouse somewhere.
That's kind of like those, what Super 7 did, that line of the Aliens toys that were based on the original Kenner designs.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is what they would have looked like had they come out. So, I see what you mean. It is. It's like sun faded. That is so cool.
That is all.
Wow, that's interesting. And no, we're not for a second thinking you're talking down to the fans' pride. No, nothing like that. Everybody, you know what? I'm a big believer. Live and let live. You know, everybody has their own opinion. And their own viewpoints, and I'm not one to criticize or think ill of anybody's opinions on anything. I have the very unpopular opinion that Galvatron is cooler than Megatron, I've never been a fan of Cobra Commander, so
I trust you've been skewered on that.
Plenty of times, but I have no problem defending it. I just, I don't know.
I got to tell you, you know, you were talking about, you know, the combiners. I think, first of all, so a few questions back, someone asked guys like Computron and Abominus and so on, were they as popular? I would say no. I mean, if I were to walk up to 10 random people at Comic-Con and say, do you remember Devastator, Superion, Menasor, Computron, Abominus, Defensor? Like, out of those six guys, who do you remember the most? Guarantee you Devastator is going to be number one.
Yeah.
And then probably followed by the Aerial Bots, probably followed by the Stunticons. So those are usually your top three. That's been my experience. Even friends of mine who aren't Transformers fans remember Devastator. So that tells you the impact of that character on our culture, right?
Oh. No, exactly. Like I said, I remembered him clearly simply because he had a lot of time on the cartoon.
Yes.
He got a lot of play, and it always just seemed to me like all the other combiners were follow-ups to him. Now, I don't know. Maybe they weren't. Maybe some of them were released at the same time. Maybe he just got the most spotlight, or maybe he really was the first. I don't.
He was the first.
Chronologically, yes. He was the first. The Aerobots and Decepticons came very shortly afterwards. The overlap wasn't that bad. But it wasn't like, you know, Devastator came and then 4 years later we got the others. It was like 1 year, I think, back to back. But Devastator definitely had more time in the limelight, too, because, you know, think about it. Transformers, the movie, the theatrical film, he's the only combiner featured there because at the time they were writing the film, he was the only one they had ready to go for the writers to utilize. Mm. And, of course, Superion and Menasor got a fair amount of airtime, too, once they were introduced. But once you jump to the Abominus and Computrons of the world, even Defensor, you know, I couldn't measure it in minutes for you, but they didn't get as much attention from a media standpoint as a Devastator did or so on. And I'm not just talking about the cartoon. I'm also talking about the comic book, you know, storybooks and so on. So that said, Computron, Abominus, all those guys that came later, they are still very much loved. And I think the fact that Computron came out with two different versions in the same year between Japan and the U.S. kind of speaks to how much confidence Takara Tomy and Hasbro both had in that particular character.
Boy, no kidding.
Well, and I get the sense that all the combiners really do resonate hugely with fans simply because you get like five different personalities and you combine them into one thing and you think, wow, because you think of humans, when you put five humans together, like at work, if you have like a training project and they put you in teams of five and you have to solve a problem, how well does that usually work out? So you think of these five alien robots, they come together to form one cohesive unit to work together as one warrior, and you're like, you know, maybe some of our some of what makes us human, I'm like, well, there are a few flaws here and there, but I mean, it's just it is an awesome idea. Just so funny because I look back on all the Transformers I had, I'm like, wow, not one of them was a combiner, even part of a combiner. My family, they missed the boat on all of that, I guess.
No, it was tough, let me tell you. Back then, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, the only way I really ever saw combiners fully combined in person was I had two members of the team, another friend had a member, another friend had the other guys. We all met yes. up at the playground or something, and we put them together, and oh my God, there yeah. it is, you know?
Yeah, but, that's except never saw one fully combined as a kid. Never.
Well, because I had a friend because my dad was in the Army, so we moved around all the time. Every year or every 2 years, we were picking up, moving somewhere else, settling down. But in between, like every summer, we'd come to where my parents were from in New York, and when I went to visit one, when we stayed with one set of grandparents, around the corner, there was a kid who, he had these two, like, duffel bags full of Transformers. So, when we came up here to visit, I mean, we played G.I. Joe, because like I said, that was my bread and butter. But right. when we came up here to visit, I was more excited, you know, because I had a ton of G.I. Joe. I had a sliver of the Transformer, so
right.
I was always more excited to break into those duffel bags and go through all this stuff because he had, I mean, I don't know looking back if he had anywhere near a complete collection, but it sure as hell looked like it to me.
It was
right? Yeah, it was like if these were in the package, it would look like he had just come from the toy store.
Right.
Because he seemed to have everybody. He had everybody from the movie. He had all the characters from the movie. He had, he had race cars. He had airplanes. He had, he had some of the characters that had the little robots that turned into the guns, which fascinated the hell out of me. I didn't know what they were. He couldn't have even told me who some of those characters were. But it was so friggin' awesome to play with them. I'm like, well, I don't have any of this. I used to love ripping into those duffel bags. I'd get more excited than he would, because usually if he didn't have anybody over, those duffel bags were in his closet.
Right.
And, well, mostly because looking back, I think his mother was kind of a pain in the ass about cleaning up when he was done. But, mm-hmm. yeah, it was like he'd break those out, and it was like like finding the pot of gold with the leprechaun.
Sounds like a really lucky kid.
Yeah. I think he had days where he was kind of an asshole. Now I look back, I'm like, maybe he was spoiled. I'm not sure. Maybe he was a douchebag. I'm not really sure. But yeah, even as a kid, he got a lot of stuff. I mean, but yeah, I remember just being excited to, see all this stuff that I didn't otherwise have access to. Because every time we moved, I would always find, I've always been prone to just having a few real close friends. And sure. And sometimes we'd live in a place where some of the kids did have Transformers, or they did have other G.I. Joes. And then there were other places we lived where if I had people that I could hang out with, they might have had other stuff, but yeah, so I didn't get to see a lot of that stuff. I mean, and living on army bases and stuff, I guess some of the parents were a little more prone to buying G.I. Joe than
sure.
Transformers, but I also remember going over there and seeing Star Wars figures that I didn't even know existed because, I mean, I had a ton of those too, but, you know, because they were little, they were cheap. So, you know, he had a bunch of them, but I remember looking and I'm like, who's this? I don't have some of this stuff. He had a bunch of Ewoks I didn't have and I was jealous, but.
Said no one ever.
Exactly.
All right,
thank
shut
you.
Up. I said that. Be quiet. Get off my podcast.
I got to back Jimbo on that one.
All right, I'm cutting both your mics. That's enough. So Ben, have you always been into it, like from the very beginning? Like, were you there, or you know, did you discover it on accident? Did family introduce you to it, or did you find it on TV one day, and you said, "Well, this is, you know, this is it forever. This is the greatest thing that ever happened."
My introduction to Transformers was absolutely accidental. I, back then, was largely into the Kenner Star Wars line, as many, you know, little boys were back then.
Yep.
And
how old were you when they premiered?
Oh, gosh. I was about 8-ish, 8, 9-ish, in 84, or when I first found them. And okay. The interesting thing is, I was introduced to the toys before the fiction. So what happened was I was up in Canada visiting some relatives in Montreal, and everyone was like, oh, let's go to the mall. So we went to the mall, and I think it was – I could be wrong about that. I think it was a Sears, of all things. And we went to the toy department, and I was looking for Star Wars. And we didn't see the Star Wars, and on my way to the Star Wars section, wherever that was, I saw the Transformers. And I – you know, my mind instantly latched onto it because, you know – first of all, if you remember, you know, kind of the profile of how toy store shelves looked back then, it really was unlike anything else.
Yeah, I was just going to say that myself.
You know, the packaging,
yeah.
The artwork, the tech specs, right, which were my first introduction to the fiction of the world, right, all of that. And if you recall, the original Transformers had these beautiful illustrations on the back showing a battle scene.
I was going to say, it was Transformers and G.I. Joe both. All of the toy packaging was covered in this gorgeous, fully painted artwork by these high-end professional artists that would put their heart and soul and every drop of talent that they had into this thing. Like,
you
they
were just
creating
buying
true
a toy. You were buying into a mythos.
Exactly. I mean,
yeah.
That was new completely.
Think about how powerful that is. Like, in one image, you're showing me a universe and I instantly want to know more about it, right? That's incredible. So I started looking at the tech specs, and that's the interesting thing is the tech specs are what drew me in. And I said, oh, this guy's got a personality. This guy's got a different personality. And I turned to an uncle of mine, and I say, hey, I want, you know, can I get these? And I thought he was only going to buy me one, but he was feeling generous that day, so he bought me a bunch. He bought me Ironhide, Ratchet, Sunstreaker. I got Rumble and Ravage that day. I think I got at least one other one, but you know, he just kind of went hog wild. He just grabbed. I didn't even pick them. He just said, "Okay, we'll take this, 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 and this," and then we went to check out. I never even saw the Star Wars section because it was so rare.
I got the sense that you were running towards the Star Wars section,
yeah,
and you got distracted by the Transformers.
Exactly,
you forgot what Star Wars was altogether.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I kid you not. I have very, very clear, crisp images burned in my head of sitting at my grandma's table, you know, in the living room. It's a coffee table, breaking everything out of the packaging, and I just kept going back from taking the toy, you know, first putting the stickers on, then changing them from one form to the other, then reading the personality on the box, and then going back to playing with the toy. And that cycle just continued for me for hours, and that's, you know, that's the magic right there.
Well,
that's the magic that took me in.
Well, I mean, these little kids, you know, who doesn't love robots and who doesn't love cool vehicles, and then all of a sudden you've got this cool vehicle that turns into a robot and vice versa, and it's like, Jesus, this is like the perfect toy.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so your uncle started you on it. So
yeah.
Now, here's the question. Now, is that uncle, is he still around? Is he alive? I mean, still, I mean, does he realize that
the monster that,
if
that
I
he's
buy
created?
Those...
Oh, he has no clue, because this is my family who's in Canada, and
okay.
I've only recently got back in touch with them, thanks to Facebook, so I still haven't gotten to catch up with him.
I just wondered, because, you know what, in the last couple of years, I've watched so much of my family, especially my older aunts and uncles, so many of them have gotten sick and died in the last few years I'm a little bit reluctant to ask other people, because, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
I hear you.
So if you reconnect with him, wouldn't it be crazy if he just, you showed him your World of Transformers site and he'd look at it, and if he happened to remember buying you those, he might just be thinking, oh my God, what did I do? Because I know it's like my dad, I was 4 years old. My dad went to the PX. He bought me Rock and Roll, the blonde machine gunner from G.I. Joe. He brought it home for me. That was it for me.
Yeah, you were in.
Yeah, he had no idea at the time that buying this for his four-year-old was going to create a hobby for me that to this day I'm nearing my late 30s. And at this point, it's always been there. He had no idea that buying that one toy for me was going to hook me for life. So it's like, so yeah, your uncle, he'd look at it and be like, huh, who knew? I thought I was just buying him robots, but
exactly.
I didn't realize that, you know, I was going to change his life there.
Yeah. And there's something very profound about that. You know, it's a, you know, we, as adults, we need to be very cognizant, especially in the modern age, I think, where it's not just our immediate family or our immediate friends that we have an effect on. You know, when I work on my website, I'm very cognizant that there's a possibility that, you know, a kid could be reading my site or a parent could be reading my site. And these are things that I try to keep in mind whenever I'm writing a review or writing a news article, which is why, you know, I use the style that I do.
Well, it is. It's very reader-friendly. Like I said, I'm a big fan, but I'm probably novice level when it comes to, you know, my qualification, or not my, you know what I mean, my actual,
knowledge,
my knowledge base about it. But when I read through your site, it is clearly written for anybody to pick up. Like, you're not writing a site that's, because I've seen a lot of Transformers blogs that they write about this stuff, but they go into such depth that it's very easy to say, wow, you know what? I don't even know what this guy's reviewing anymore because he's gone off on four tangents about other products that only vaguely tie into this. And I'm like, I don't know, but your site, it can speak to, parents who are trying to introduce themselves or trying to introduce their kids into something or like you said, the grandparents that are aware that one of their grandkids is into the robots, so let's see what's up there. And, hey, we can actually understand this site. For the absolute experts that, they're going, then they might just be going to read the reviews because they know the characters, but they want to see what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, and, I'll tell you, one of the most profound emails that I got one day, this was about, 10 years ago or so. I don't even know if the gentleman still reads my site, but I got an email from a gent who said, hey, I love reading your site, and one of the things I appreciate is that you go into the step-by-step transformation part, and you also describe the colors. And, at first I'm reading this email, I'm like, that's kind of an odd thing to thank me for. that's just what you do, right? Then I get to the bottom of the email, he says, something like, just so you know, I'm blind, but I enjoy Transformers.
Oh, wow.
And
interesting.
I think he had a text-to-speech thing reading my reviews for him, and it helped him experience the figure. And he didn't give me any details, but he didn't need to. It's just fascinating because it taught me a lesson, many years ago where it said, oh, you just never know who's reading, and you gotta take that into account. When you put anything out there, you have to be careful about the words that you choose. And that's a philosophy I try to conduct myself with in everything that I do when it comes to my site.
And you have to, because like you said, he didn't need to go into any detail. Just finding out that he had that particular attribute totally changed the way you even saw what you were working on, because you realized that now I'm reiterating, your site really is for anybody that wants to know more about it. I mean, that is so cool. I know, had I gotten an email like that, I might have just cried. I might have just been like, oh, I don't even know what to say to that, because holy shit.
I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. And I don't know if he collects anymore, but I kind of lost touch with him after a while. We wrote a few times, but something like that really changes your perspective. And I still occasionally get emails or messages on Facebook from parents or grandparents even who are saying, is this age appropriate for my child or my grandchild? My kid keeps talking about this character. What is that? can you help me find it? And I'll point them to it. And I love doing that because, we're in our 30s, 40s range here, right?
Yes.
Us guys chatting here. We are not the target audience for the most part. We are not. We may carry the torch for a little while, but there's going to come a time where we're going to have to drop it, right? And other kids are going to have to pick it up. And let me tell you, right now, I got kids, I call them kids, right? But, I have people who said, my introduction to Transformers as in junior high was Transformers Prime. So if you think about the age range that puts them in, they're not even out of college yet.
Well,
so,
you know what? It's like lifelong Star Wars fan. I've got a 12-year-old whom she got into Star Wars. She was 4. I took her to see the Clone Wars movie. And I didn't realize it was an animated movie. I brought her and my girlfriend's kids, and we went to see it. And I did not realize, you always have that hope that when you have kids that they're going to take some of your passions and maybe carry them on. But you don't know. People are like, well, you planned it. No, I didn't plan it. I had no idea it was going to appeal to her, but it did.
Right.
And just now, before we did this podcast, she's now 12 years old, and we just got finished watching a couple episodes of Clone Wars just because we like to do that together. We've seen Rogue One together twice.
That's great.
And I told her we're going to see it again in January. But it's not a thing that I was planning on, but it's just one of those where And little by little, some of the knowledge I have, I pass on to her, and she gets it. She reads some of the reference stuff, and now I'm well aware that within a few years, once she becomes real, once she starts going through adolescence, and she goes on that journey that we all went through painfully, sometimes disturbingly, that you go to find out who you actually are. I have a feeling she's going to carry this with her, and she and her fandom will go off in different directions, and she'll have different passions and things that will appeal to her. And some of it might be stuff that you know, we can understand mutually. And then there's going to be other things that, Brian, he's a huge fan of all things Sith. I think my give a shit about the Sith is sort of limited to Palpatine and Vader. I'm not a Darth Bane. Darth Bane's pretty cool, but I don't care about any of the other ones. Honestly.
Yeah, I think I have every Sith action figure.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. He buys them all. There were a couple I bought for custom fodder, but whatever. It's one of, and so now you've got this site that it appeals to everybody. I mean, do you have kids?
I do not. I have a cat.
That's all right. We have dogs, so no worries.
Is the cat named after a Transformer? Please say yes.
Oh, well, no, he was pre-named. We adopted him. His name is Tigger.
Okay. Well, you should have changed his name to Cheetor. But it's, I know, that's still, you know what, we got a friend of the podcast who's been a long-time listener. He was a guest on the previous version of this podcast. We had, there's a character in G.I. Joe, the movie, named Nemesis Enforcer. Well,
right.
Dean, one day he was talking about the cats he had, and one of them's name was Nemesis, and one of them's name was Enforcer. and it was only just recently, I think in the last year, one of those cats died. Aww. So he's only got the other one, but I believe they got a new kitten. So, you know, the cat has company now. But, yeah, Dean just, he said immediately, that's just, you know, they had to have those names. There were, a few years ago, we found some kittens in the garage. There was this cat that was sort of hanging around. And we're like, where'd that cat come from? Well, one day we're in the garage. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, this kitten's in the back of the. No, I mean, we were going to adopt him out. You know, we were going to, but. One of them that I knew we were just temporarily keeping, it was all black, so I named it Snake Eyes. But, yeah, it's one of those. Well, Brian, didn't you say your new puppy, isn't it named after a Sherlock character? I could be wrong, but...
We were going to name her after a Sherlock character, but she did not take to the name.
Oh, that's right. So that's right. You changed her name.
Yeah, we had to change her name to something that she would respond to, unfortunately. We were going to adopt another blue heeler, and it was male. Unfortunately, somebody was adopting him just as I was coming in to get him. We were going to name him Rhodey.
I applaud that effort.
And you know what? Good for you for adopting. You know, it's always good to hear that.
Our last three dogs are rescues.
Yeah, so many critters need a home.
That's so much worse than just being sniped on eBay. It's like, you took dog from me.
That
is quite a dramatic...
It broke my heart, quite honestly. I'm still...
I was running into the shelter with my money. And,
right.
Yeah.
If you had left the house 5 minutes before... You could have laughed at them on the
way. Well, I did this at lunch from I was at work and I left from lunch and went down to the shelter and they're like, oh no, he's at an adoption site, you know, an adoption event, like half a mile from my work. And I had driven clear across town to the shelter. So I had to drive clear across back to where they're having the adoption. I came in and the guy's just got his credit card back. And I'm like, you better take goddamn good care of this dog.
Man, that's when you're sitting there watching him get it out and say, be declined.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so, Ben, you've always been into it. And so is it, do you have other geek passions besides Transformers?
Oh yeah, like I said, when I was younger.
Well, I know you're into Star Trek.
I was into Star Wars. You've seen that.
I've definitely seen that you're into Star Trek too, and that's mutual with all of us. I discovered my friend in high school introduced me to Star Trek, and you know what? Case in point, what you were just saying, my introduction to Star Trek, my true introduction was Star Trek Generations. Mm-hmm. Most of the world dislikes that movie. Few people hate it. Most people just don't like it.
It's what ignited
my fandom. I went to see that, and I walked out, and I told my friend, who had sort of, he didn't drag me into going, but he sort of talked me into it. I'm like, whatever. So we saw it, and I walked out, and I'm like, dude, we have to go to the store and buy the movie toys. I was a Trekker from that day on. So I understand what you mean.
Had you seen any before that?
When I was a kid, my dad would watch Star Trek on TV sometimes. Or then I remember watching the first season or two of TNG because my dad was watching TNG when it first launched. Because I remember watching on TV, I distinctly remember watching Encounter at Farpoint and of all episodes, The Skin of Evil. Tasha Yar meets her ridiculous end.
Yeah.
And I remember watching
it.
Stop that. That's not all right, you're right. I do remember watching those with my dad, but it was one of those things. I think we moved and we got reassigned and maybe the stations where we live weren't playing it anymore. Maybe he wasn't watching it anymore. So that was sort of it. There was probably 6 or 7 years there where there was no Star Trek. And then my friend, we moved to a new place and we got to know each other. And we started hanging out. We were freshmen in high school. And he said, well, there's a new Star Trek movie. You know, because they'd been to his house. They'd seen all the Star Trek stuff. And he was talking to me one day about Deep Space Nine. He could have been speaking a different language. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. But, you know, when you have friends, sometimes you're like, I don't know, but you just go with it. So,
sure.
But he said, well, there's a new Star Trek movie coming out, and we should go see that. And then the weekend we were going to go, there was a snowstorm, so we had to wait until the next weekend. But we did, and he's like, even if you don't like it, I'm just glad you came. We walked out of there. I'm like, dude, you had no – I'm like – where has this always been? I'm like, this is awesome. And so, case in point, you never know when these companies put a product out, who they're going to hook and with what. Yeah, my daughter, she started with Clone Wars. I've got a friend. There's a guy that at work, he's been a lifelong Star Wars fan. He's got a daughter who's 12. She didn't care about Star Wars until The Force Awakens last year.
Right.
So you never know. And like I said, you get a big age range for people. And, yeah, it's funny because I've got, people on Facebook that you see, they're like, sometimes Reddit. The only thing I read on Reddit is the Star Wars leaks site. And there's one guy that posted on there one day, they're like, ooh, I remember watching the Clone Wars in high school, and I'm like, high school? Damn, what?
Yeah.
What?
College.
Hey, I wasn't alive when the first Star Wars movie came out, but...
Yeah, I saw that in theater.
To answer your question, my introduction into sci-fi was largely thanks to my mom. She was a Trek fan because, when she was young, the original series was airing. Granted, it was in reruns at that point, but she watched it and she was very attached to it. So when I was old enough to understand it, I was lucky enough that there was a local channel in New York City that played Trek 5 nights a week. So every day I was getting a hit of Trek, essentially, the original series. And I can honestly say I grew up with it, and we also went to the conventions that used to be held in New York City. So about once a quarter, I was going to a sci-fi convention and see, you know, meeting the actors and so on. And it's not it was not like it is now back then.
No.
That's so funny. I can't even picture my parents driving down the same street as the convention, let alone going into one. I don't even know if they'd, I don't even know. To this day, I don't know if they'd know what a convention was. I can't imagine that. That's awesome.
She introduced me to it, and I think she'd read about it in a newspaper or something like that, She caught wind of it, and you know, it helped that they were back then doing them in New York City pretty regularly. They don't anymore. But back then, yeah, about once every 3 to 4 months, you had a convention, and, you know, you paid like $20 a head. And you went in, and it was just open. It's not like Comic-Con now, or any con, really.
Where with lines
and autograph. You know, autograph is one price, and a photo is another price, and then a photo op is another price. Back then, it was you paid, you formed a line, you got your autograph, you took a picture with them, and you went away. I have plenty of pictures of myself with the original Star Trek cast members, you know, just at a table, you know, at an autograph table when I was like 8 or 9 years old. So that encouragement into being into geekdom and sci-fi informed a lot of my later years. So, you know, when I was a teenager, I spent a lot of time in comic shops. I spent a lot of time, you know, at Forbidden Planet and so on. You know, while I was doing all that, my friends were, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, growing out of it, and they were going to clubs and they were getting drunk and staying out all night and everything. And that just wasn't my thing for a long time. So let's fast forward. I started my site in 1997. I mean, you can't really have a site like mine and detach yourself from geekdom.
No.
So
no, you can't.
You know, we cover my site, I have some help sometimes with events. So like Toy Fair, that's something I go to every year. And, you know, there's a little side coverage. I focus on Transformers, but when I'm tweeting from the Hasbro session, you know, if they talk about Marvel or Star Wars, I'll tweet about that too. Why not? You know, people are interested.
Well, I was going to say, you cover everything. So for people that only ever visit your site, they're still getting some news.
Exactly. And then, you know, with Comic-Con, I go to New York Comic-Con every year, or I have the last 5 years. When I cover it, you know, I could do articles that have nothing to do with Transformers. You know, I did this amazing virtual reality experience for Westworld at this past Comic-Con, and it was incredible. And it was something I absolutely had to write about. And it's on VWTF, but it doesn't have anything to do with Transformers. But I figure I can't be the only guy who's into Transformers and into other sci-fi properties.
Exactly.
Hell no. You know what?
I mean, that's why when JD and I sat down to do this podcast all those years ago, it's like, what are we, you know, are we going to call it a G.I. Joe podcast? Are we going to call it a customizing podcast? Well, no, because we want to talk about Doctor Who, and we want to talk about Transformers, and we want to talk about G.I. Joe, and we want to talk about, we are, none of us are one property fans,
right,
to be sure.
That's why our podcast logo has geekery is spelled out in every letter of it. Is a different font and a different style from a different property because,
uh-huh,
yeah, we're multifaceted nerds. I mean, we cover a little bit of everything: movies, books, sci-fi, television shows, comic books, just whatever happens to come up in the conversation a lot of times. But the geeky aspect we don't cover is games because none of us are gamers.
Nope.
But when it comes to geek properties, there was no way. Yeah, Brian's right. We were talking about it. And I'm like, do we want to focus on something? Do we want to? We're like, no, we can't limit it because we like too many different things.
We're whores.
What?
Because we're whores.
Well, yeah, that too. Well, Brian's the iron whore. Yeah, Ben, I always make the joke that he's got an entire room in this house dedicated to Iron Man, and he always corrects me that it's not the whole room.
It's just most of the room.
It's just
the whole
room. A large portion of the room.
But yeah, that's exactly why. We like a little bit of a whole lot of stuff, and I've never watched Westworld. I've heard of it.
Me too. It's good.
You should absolutely watch. If you're into sci-fi that makes you think, if you're into beautiful cinematography, if you're also into good ways of taking an old property and resurrecting it, that is the show.
A couple months ago, Westworld, the original, was on sci-fi, and I sat down and I'm watching this. I'm like, the only thing cool about this is Yul Brynner, but that's because Yul Brynner made everything cool.
This is true.
It's like, no matter what the guy was in, it turned into gold. Yeah. Even if the rest of it was crap, he made it great. So I'm sitting there watching this, I'm like, and it's not because it's dated, or it's not because it's old-fashioned, or it's not because it's limited, or, technologically wise. I'm watching this, I'm like, this is just not entertaining. I'm like, these people, this, it's such a great idea, but I'm like, it just feels so limited with what they were doing with it. You know, the characters were kind of cool.
You need to watch the HBO show, man. If that's your feeling, but you need to watch the show. That's going to give you what you're looking for. Do you like Blade Runner?
No. Okay, all right, I admit. If I could stay awake through the whole thing, I'd probably love it, but... Yeah. I know.
Yeah,
Cardinal's in.
That just shocks me. You're dead to me.
Yeah, what?
You're dead to me.
I am not. Stop it. Brian's the guy that got me started on that BBC Sherlock show that's on right now. I haven't watched a new one yet, but he started me on that.
I still need to send you a copy of Dune as well.
That again. Okay. What
are the miniseries?
No, the book.
The book.
I don't know. I went on Audible and I found Dune on there, and they said it was like running time of like 26 hours. I'm like, maybe not.
Sit down and read the print one. I'll send you a copy.
That will literally take me 4 years to read.
You might be surprised, man.
We could.
Emily's
very
shaking
well
her head. I think you're dead to her too.
But I'm dead to her every other thing that I say anyway. So, I mean, every time I bring up Cronin from Hellboy, I die all over again. So, or Gwen Stacy. Yeah, Ben, this is the thing. His wife's in the background, and I have to make these cracks just to, stir the pot just a little bit.
I gotcha.
I don't know. Does your wife, does she like Transformers, or is it just sort of your thing and she gets it but doesn't care?
My girlfriend does respect the geekery sometimes, but Transformers is not one of those. But she, like, for instance, with Westworld that we were just talking about, we were both absolutely captivated by that. So that's an example. Game of Thrones, another example of something, we watch together. So, yeah, and I think, to the point, I think it's important to balance things out, right? When BotCon was still the Transformers convention, for instance, I used to get a lot of questions from friends and, fans say, why doesn't, your girlfriend come to BotCon? And my running joke was because I'd like her to still be my girlfriend when I get back from BotCon.
See, and that's like our vacation is my wife and I, we go to the Denver Comic Con.
Let me tell you guys a great story. So, I think it was New York Comic Con 2011, right? And you guys have been to convention, so you kind of have an idea of how frenetic it can get.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, have you guys ever been to New York Comic Con?
No. I've got a buddy that keeps wanting me to come out for it, but I've never gone.
It's held at the Jacob Javits Convention Center, which you have to imagine is a gigantic glass and steel building. It's just like a steel skeleton with glass on top. It's a beautiful, beautiful structure. And this facility is ginormous, right?
And where they have Toy Fair next month, right?
Yes. Year? So a lot of the retailers wind up at Toy Fair there. Exactly.
I get the sense that convention hall is more like going into a football stadium.
It kind of is.
Yeah, I get the sense that it just takes up a huge chunk of real estate.
Yes.
And it's got limitless square footage to fit these massive events in, right?
And believe it or not, New York Comic Con's outgrowing. So that's a whole other discussion. The way they used to have it set up, they don't do it like this anymore, but you used to be able to walk into this lobby area without any ticket because they would take the tickets deeper inside. They now actually take the tickets right at the door, so that's a different story. But in 2011, you could just walk into the lobby and kind of like get an idea of what was happening, even if you didn't have a ticket. So I was leaving. I was going to meet up with her one day. I said, why don't you meet me at Javits? Let's get together there, and then we'll walk over to get dinner. So she walks in. She kind of soaks it all in, and then later we're talking. She says, that's like the extent of how much I want to experience Comic-Con. I do not want to go any deeper into that event because it's just too much stuff happening and stuff being thrown at you. And I think it does take a certain amount of energy to
definitely
get into that, you know?
Well, because, yeah, Brian goes to the Denver Comic Con, and his wife goes with him, but, you know, they're both Whovians. But,
there you go.
But she's a bigger Whovian, and she's a massive Ninja Turtles fan, where I think Brian likes it, but, you know, I mean, he's a fan, but, like, they have their geek equally distributed between the two of them.
Definitely.
And then, like, my significant other and I, there were things where, for her, the prequels killed Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
Where the prequels for me fuel my Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
But like Deadpool, we're both ridiculous fans of. So we've got, you know, she's got her geeky stuff. She always played computer games and like Ultima and whatever growing up. I didn't know what it was. That's why I just wondered if your girlfriend was, you know, because I've met couples where one of the geek and the other one's just not. I'm like, I'm in any of them. Yeah, I watch it with her, but I don't care that much. I'm like, what? you know, there's couples that can't play movie trivia because, you know, one skews that way and the other one doesn't. But I just, yeah, that's why I was just curious if, so she does ever geek stuff, but not necessarily the Transformers.
Yeah, I think casual fan is the way to describe it. And, you know, I think there's something interesting, and I've always felt this, about being into sci-fi and geekdom and stuff like that, is we can walk into a convention hall or a comic book shop, right, a busy comic book shop, and we draw a certain amount of energy from it. I think that's just how we're built, right?
Well, absolutely.
As fans. But your average Joe who is not into it the way we are, you put him in that, and he or she is just going to say, this is exhausting. Why do you do this? And that's the difference, right? That's how you know, oh, I'm into the geekdom. I really love this stuff. You know, and it doesn't matter what the property is. I don't care if you're a brown coat, a Whovian, a Trekker, you know, or a Transformers fan. It doesn't matter. If you're drawing energy from that excitement that all these other people have, it's a wonderful thing. I remember not too long ago, sitting in a room at Comic-Con with, I don't know if you guys watched a show on sci-fi called Dark Matter. It's a really fun show. And they had a panel with almost the whole cast there. I think most of the cast was there. The producer was there. And it was, you know, maybe about 100 people in this room, maybe a little more. And everyone was just into it. I mean,
I was going to say, you don't have to have a big crowd to have the most passionate fans in the world.
Yeah, and it was like everything they said, laughing and the screaming and the clapping. And, you know, I mean, that kind of energy is infectious, and it's a wonderful thing.
I watched a panel online. It was from some convention from a few years ago where I think it was a panel for the TV show Fringe. Now, two of the cast members were there. One of the producers was there. One of like the set designer or somebody was on there. But it was like they had a good sized crowd, I guess, for the, you know, because they showed the audience. They had a pretty good sized crowd, but man, it was like I found this panel. I was watching it on YouTube because I had just discovered Fringe. I was watching it on Netflix, and but I'm like, wow. I'm like, these people about Fringe are the way, you know, people are about Star Wars and whatever. And just like they have a like, because when I was watching it on Netflix, I remember back when it was on TV, reading like Entertainment Weekly and how like the ratings would go up week to week, and it seemed like every season the thing was on the bubble, you know, on the verge of possible cancellation. But Fox just kept bringing it back because they believed in it. And somebody that was on the executive staff was obviously a big fan.
Right.
So they kept bringing it back. But then in everyday life, I talk to people. A lot of people haven't heard of it. But I was watching this panel. I'm like, these people, they're so excited about it. I'm like, this, the rabid following that it did have must have been what fueled the show to keep coming back. Now, when I was watching it, so weird, the first two seasons were amazing. Mm-hmm. The third season was good, but it got a little caught up in its own mythos, I guess, sort of rolled itself into a corner at one point. The fourth season was interesting. I'm still not sure if that was great interesting or ridiculous interesting, but it was it was a change. The fifth season, straight off the rails, over the hill, into the valley, into the river, under the valley, and then the fireball. Because I remember watching the fifth season, which was a short season, thinking to myself, in fact, she and I, we looked at each other, we're like, what the fuck did they do here? I'm like, this is nuts. I mean, had they, what the show set up, it was sort of a logical progression of what they had set up, but it didn't feel like that's when they introduced some of this stuff into the mythos. It did not feel like that is what they were trying to set up. Mm-hmm. It's like this is just where they decided to take it, and it was odd. I didn't hate it, but it wasn't good. That's a show. That's an example of, it was clearly a work in progress as they went with it, and it was great, but some shows, they get so caught up in their own little continuity things that sometimes it's just like, I think they're lost. I think they're not quite sure what to do with it, because it's like they always seem to want to be doing something else. But now, in retrospect, when I saw how prominently J.J. Abrams was put as a producer, and I'm just like, huh, yeah, all right, that sort of makes sense. like, I like his work, but he always gets to that point where whatever he touches, it just becomes a little bit convoluted, and then he sort of takes a more hands-off approach, and I'm like, yeah, that thing where he creates this puzzle, but he doesn't necessarily, not actually interested in solving the puzzle. He wants to set the puzzle. He wants to put the pieces on the table and just put some of it together. but I don't know. So it's one of those things. So Transformers is number one for you, but then you got this other stuff, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any tattoos? Do you have a Transformers tattoo?
No, never even considered one, believe it or not. I mean, you know, you get to this point where, I mean, I'm sitting at my desk, I'm looking up, and there's like 40 carded Transformers on my wall. You know, before we got together this evening, I was Photoshopping Transformers for my website. You know, I've got a light box permanently set up in my apartment to you know, photograph stuff for my site. You know, it's so on the brain all the time that, for me, and I'm only speaking for me, okay, getting a tattoo of an Autobot symbol or something would just turn me it would just turn me into a parody of myself, I think.
I gotcha. You know? Yeah, it would actually become redundant for you because because so much about you already says Transform. Why do you need a tattoo that says it? I know last time I had Brian on video, every time I looked at him on the video, all I saw was the wall of action figures behind him. I'm just like, I look behind me, I'm like, oh, there's the top of the chair that I sit in for this. You know, because I have no display area to speak of, but so yeah, you look, everywhere you look, there's Transformers.
That just reminds me that actually my wife actually has a couple Transformers. She has one, and his name is Carl. And she has another one, and his name is Blue Carl.
What the hell? Okay, all right, Brian. What are their actual names?
I don't know. Carl and Blue Carl.
Because, again, novice level fan, sometimes I'll buy a Transformer. I don't necessarily like the name, so I'll just change it.
One is a orange and black dragon.
Predacon?
No.
Maybe.
Or Predaking.
No, it's not. It's not a. I think it's a Beast Wars.
Oh. Well,
it depends on which series, but if it's the more recent Beast Hunters, black and orange dragon, that was Predaking. They repurposed the name from the Combiner.
Huh? Yeah, I don't remember it being Predaking. You know, maybe it was.
Predaking.
It is Predaking. And then Blue Carl is a two-headed dragon, I think. And he's
the Cryofire Predaking, which they're similar.
Yeah, so there you go.
Or if he's a much older one, that's a different character altogether. So I'd actually have to see a picture. See, well, believe it or not, double-headed dragon goes to a lot of different characters.
I was going
to
say, because you got that one that just came out, what? I know they're calling him Twinferno. I know he had a different name before, but it's a two-headed dragon. You know, I know dragons with many different heads. It's a thing with Transformers, which I fully support. I love dragons.
Yeah, apparently it's a Cryofire Predaking.
Robotic dragons are amazing.
Cryofire Predaking is what it is.
There you go. Yeah, that was a nice piece. Really nice deco on that one.
Yeah, she.
So
she
why did Emily get those two?
She's like, we saw him in the store, and she's like, "Oh, he's so cute. I gotta have him." I got
those were just the ones that I liked, and that was 100% it. I saw them and say, "Hey, that's cool. I'd like to have that," and that was the end of the thought.
And you named it Carl.
Yeah,
Carl.
I don't know. He looks like a Carl. Have you seen the picture? Find the picture. Tell me he doesn't look like a Carl.
It does not look like a Carl. I can't say there's anything I've ever looked at and thought Carl should be the name, to be honest.
Well, he's not an Alexander, and he's not a Joe, so...
No.
We'll go with Chad. Chad. I could go with Chad.
Chad.
There you go.
And then, you know, when we got to the second one, it's like, well, what are you going to name this one? Blue Carl. All right. That works.
Well, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I just, Brian, did you suggest any alternatives? Or
no,
was it just,
are you kidding? I'm married. I like being married.
Yeah, that's true. Gwen Stacy.
All right, I'm leaving.
Yeah, Ben, here's the background. She hates Gwen Stacy because I don't understand. She's just, I don't know. But she hates Gwen Stacy, so just the very idea of seeing like those last two Spider-Man movies where she was included, that was a no-go. It was off limits.
The story behind that is she has actually read like the first 100 issues of the original Spider-Man series.
Uh-huh.
And absolutely hates Gwen Stacy because of that.
And that's why I sort of delight in just bringing it up. I always get a reaction, so it's fun. I don't understand, but I actually have that kind of hatred for Ben. I don't know how much you know about G.I. Joe, but the characters of Tripwire and Bazooka, I have that exact same venom for.
I have never heard anyone hating Bazooka.
I hate that character. When I was a kid, I hated that figure. And now, as an adult, the comic version, the cartoon version, that still, all the toys, except for that most recent one, who I don't call Bazooka, I gave it a different name. I hate Bazooka.
Is it so Carl?
It's just, what?
Is it Carl?
No, it's Blue Carl, because, you know, he's
Blue
got a
Carl,
there
you go.
So, yeah, I'm just calling him Blue Carl. No, it's,
Carl.
I think I named him Riptide or something. He's a Navy SEAL.
Oh, all right.
But yeah, I hate Bazooka, and I hate Tripwire, so there you go.
Tripwire is one of my first three G.I. Joe figures, man.
Yep, I hated it. You know what? You know what started with the file card and that shitty figure? Even when I was a kid, I didn't have the original. I had the Tiger Force version. It looked like he threw up all over himself.
Oh, I see. You were traumatized. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shit character. Shit characters. So it's so funny because in a lot of things, I sort of have a predilection towards like the buddy pairs, like the good cop, the bad cop. But in this one case, Alpine and Bazooka, no. It is only Alpine. It is not Alpine and Bazooka. It is the one exception. I'm like, no, he sucks.
I can honestly say Joe is one of those properties where I have zero attachment. Like, I watched a cartoon. I appreciate the toys for what they are. But you could tell me you hate, you know, any character, and I just say, oh, well,
yeah,
a shame.
Yeah, I understand
well,
that.
Well, and it's so funny because most characters, if I have an opinion on them, it's usually I like them or I really like them. There's a couple characters. I'm neutral. It's just like, you know, they're there. You know, I'll include them, you know, if I have a use for them, but, you know, that's fine. It's just a couple of characters that
nose.
Just, yeah. But I guess we sort of always have that, you know, that thing that look, when I watched Star Trek Deep Space Nine now, as the show went on, I got less and less annoyed by Kira, but as being the overbearing crazy person that she started out as, and then she just became whiny, and then it was a different set of annoyances. But then at the same time, I liked Bashir at first, and by the end, I did not like Bashir anymore. So
I couldn't watch. Are there any Transformer characters for you that you just like? Grate your fingernails on the chalkboard.
You see, for me, it's not the character; it's who's writing it.
Ah.
Right?
Oh,
so,
okay. I can see that.
You know, if we do, you guys read the comic books at all?
I don't.
I have read some of the IDW stuff. It's, you know what? That's some deep mythos right there, and it's tough to get into the fact. But there are. Are there characters from that you're just not a fan of?
There are characters there that I wish they hadn't gone in the direction that they did with them. And a lot of what IDW has done, and I argue successfully, because a large portion of fandom is religiously, fanatically devoted to those titles.
But what?
It is, you know, such as More Than Meets the Eye. It's huge fan base. And my opinion is whenever something gets that much love, it's got to be doing something right. So my old school 80s curmudgeon-y, you know, thought process on what a character should be is my own and no one else's, you know. But, you know, there are characters, for instance, that you may recall in the late 80s, they had a bunch of characters called Micromasters.
Yes.
And they were small Transformers that, you know, they came in teams. They took a bunch of those guys and... good guys or bad guys, Autobots or Decepticons, didn't matter. And they basically made them into, like, little zombie Transformers. And I really didn't like that because I always liked those characters, the way they were treated in both the Japanese animation as well as the Marvel comic book from the 80s. So I thought, oh, you know, what a disservice because each of these characters has a distinct personality. They're interesting characters, and you effectively just turn them into a zombie army.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like you could have used them better, you know? That's one example. You know, there are other examples where characters who I have a very specific vision of in my head have been changed into someone basically unrecognizable. Like, if I were to tell my 9-year-old or 10-year-old self, hey, this is what they did to so-and-so, you know, this is his personality now, I'd say, no, wait, that's not him. You know, that's someone else. So you can't be talking about him. And, they, you know, so they've done that to a bunch of characters. Now, again, this is just me, because a lot of fans have responded very positively to this. So there's something to it. Let it ride. Let it be successful. I wish them all the luck in the world. I buy the title because I want to support the brand. But, yeah, you know, there's times where people take characters in directions where I don't personally understand why they did that. But, you know, it's tough sometimes.
I think anybody that reads comic books for any length of time can say that's really weird.
I was actually on board with that when they revealed, oh, they took control of his mind and all that. Like, I kind of like that reveal. What lost me a little was when he stuck with them.
Yeah,
and strange choice. But here's the thing. It grated against me, but you talk to a majority of fans, and they'll say, no, that was one of the greatest things ever. And I don't understand it, but you know what? I don't need to understand it, because if they enjoy it and they have love for it, then that's great.
Yeah, again, live and let live. You know, I don't get it, but okay. New Star Wars movie. Lots of people love Kylo Ren. I think he's a shithead. And I thought he was a shithead before he killed his father. So I'm like, this guy is just a douchebag. He is clearly Anakin Skywalker's grandson. And holy shit, please don't. Let's not. I love the prequels, but god damn it. Please don't have. Let's not have him channel his grandfather the whole time. Can he have his own personality? But lots of people, they're like, we've got to potentially be the greatest Star Wars character ever. All right, I don't see it, but hey, that's cool.
So favorite.
I'm not annoyed by Jar Jar Binks. So that's just.
You know, so as a favorite Transformer, then who's your favorite character?
Who is my favorite? Yeah. So many, but I will tell you one of my favorites is Rhinox from Beast Wars. I think he was a wonderful character. He was big, imposing, powerful, right? Powerful weaponry, but he was also an engineer, and you know he could put stuff together, and you know, and he was the guy who built the security system for their base, and you know, whenever you needed something to be fixed, he was the guy who did it. And bonus, you know, he was a voice of reason. You know, he was level-headed. He would often, you know, break up arguments or give a voice of reason in the middle of a tense discussion. So he, you know, he was kind of like the whole package when it came to a character. And I, you know, it's funny, a lot of people who watch Beast Wars will like latch on to, say, Black Arachne or Cheetor or whoever. And for me, it's always been about Rhinox. Nice. I think he's fantastic.
And what about a toy?
Do you think about Tankor?
The whole twist where Rhinox is really Tankor and all that. You know, it's funny. I'm going to tell you, if you had asked me that question in the year 2000, I would have told you, hated it, you know, I want Tankor to be his own character, it's a terrible twist, you know, what are you guys doing? I've had so many years to kind of mellow on it, and I kind of get, from a sci-fi novel perspective, what was happening there, like, oh, okay, so Megatron took the worst of these people, and he brought it out of them, and manipulated it into, you know, a bad guy. And I think partly it's because we've seen other examples of that in fiction on television outside of Transformers. So, you know, the world is not so black and white, right? There's a lot of shades of gray. And that's what that idea was playing with. So as a kid, as a younger fan, you know, college or whatever, not really a fan of it, but now as a, you know, much older, more mature adult, I totally get where they were coming from. And as a character, just, you know, a big tank who screams and has uncontrolled rage and destroys Maximals. Yeah, Tanker's really great from that perspective. And I was always a fan of the design of the Viacons on the show. I think they look great.
Who are your favorite?
So what's your favorite cartoon series? Would that be Beast Machines?
Maybe. No, it's Beast Wars. And I will tell you why. It's funny. I was just having this discussion with a friend. while Generation 1 will always have a very special place in my heart, I'm biased towards Beast Wars. First, full disclosure, you know, I helped work on the series. So I was in touch with the writers, the story editors of the show. I am, to this day, I believe, the only fan consultant ever credited in a Transformers program.
Nice.
What? Damn. There Dude, three I knew you were an expert, so I wanted you on the podcast, but damn, I didn't realize that you actually had a tie to the mythos professionally. Damn.
That's a whole other podcast discussion.
But yeah,
I remember going to your site when the show was still on and following whatnot. That's when I first discovered your site. Back then, didn't BWTF mean Beast Wars Transformers?
That is correct. I used to own the domain name BeastWars.net, and Hasbro, you know, obviously for trademark reasons,
they wanted it back.
Yeah, they needed it. And, you know, but they were very cool about it. We, you know, I knew the Hasbro team at that point. Mm-hmm. So they just gave me a call and they said, look, man, we have someone from legal here. You know, we can't let you keep it, but we don't, you know, we're not threatening you. You know, let's just talk about how, you know, what we're going to do here. And I said, you guys want it? It's yours.
Yeah, I was saying, it's yours. You can have it. You know, I'm not going to fight you for it.
Yeah, I said, you know what? Okay, I like you people. You've been really good to me. You've been very cool to me. Why would I fight you on this? I want the brand to be successful, and if this is part of your strategy, then let's do it. And, you know, the guy from legal was there, so I said, can I use BWTF? The guy said, yep, sure. And I said, okay, great. And thus BWTF was born.
That's pretty cool. When you started it, did you start it just because you needed an outlet for your Transformers fandom, or did you start it because you wanted something out of a Transformers site that wasn't already out there?
Both. Yeah. Because I was only the second Transformers website out there that got popular among fans. Keep in mind, the web was so much in its infancy back then.
Oh, well, and yeah, I was going to say, I was on the old Yahoo mailing list for G.I. Joe, so, you know, you know, I remember the infancy of the fandoms when it was like, there's, you know, or you were just amazed to discover, hey, there's other people that still care about this stuff.
Right, right.
So most of my fan interaction was on Usenet. And at some point, I began to talk to the guys who work on the show, the writers, and Bob Ford and Larry DiTilio, and they're such great guys. We're still in touch to this day. And they just started asking me questions. You know, hey, we want to do this in this episode. What do you think would be a good idea? You know, mostly with references to the original series. And I sort of became their informal fan consultant. And I started seeing more and more people who are fans of Generation 1 kind of really hating Beast Wars and bashing it. And I felt I was the bulwark who was going to defend it online. And part of that defense was building the site and saying, look, guys, this is actually a cool thing. Give it a chance.
Oh, heard for years nothing but hatred for Beast Wars. And because I had been unaware of it, I couldn't really figure out why, and then a few years went by, and I suddenly realized it's absolutely true on the internet. Haters are going to hate, and the people that complain, they're going to be louder than the people that support things. So,
For me, it was, I saw the first two episodes, I was blown away. I said, they are doing something new and different here.
It's
and
totally different. What little I know about it, I'm like, that was a radical direction to take the property in. You got to admire that kind of a bold choice.
It was a gutsy move that you got to think nowadays would never happen again.
Hell no.
So the thing that I think I also love the series for, aside from my personal involvement, is it is, and I will debate anyone about this, it is the line that saved Transformers, because Generation 2 was not financially successful, and the fact that we're not talking about, you know, well, Generation 2 went on for 10 years, there's a reason for that. Now, here's the sad part. Generation 2 had some amazing toys, but it did not have the media support it needed to be a successful line.
I was going to say, the Marvel, there was a G2 comic, right? But I don't think it went on for all that long, did it?
12 issues and one special.
Oh, wow. Because the only part of it I ever read, they had a 4-issue crossover with G.I. Joe. Larry Hama just sort of wrote them into the book,
yep.
And they had a big storyline. And then he went back to writing. When it was over, he went back to writing the story that, he sort of continued his through line, went through the Transformers books, but it was really cool. And then I remember reading a couple issues of the actual, because I went and bought the G2 comic, and I'm just like, this is just odd. Like, it didn't feel like the same, I don't know, it was different. And I got the sense, even then, because I saw the beginning of the line in the toys, it even then it sort of looked to me like they were trying something new, but it wasn't quite taking.
Yeah, it didn't have the support it needed. I think if there had been a full fledged cartoon, you know, with maybe some of the original cast, or even like what they did with Joe, right, where it went to another studio, but they kept it was essentially a continuation of Real American Hero.
Exactly, they had some of the same voice act, and it was. Cheaper, but it was definitely, you're right, it was definitely a continuation of of the, you know.
So we didn't have that for Transformers. So when Beast Wars came and they did have full media support, I think at that point they learned, yep, we need a cartoon to back this up. We can make the best toys in the world and it doesn't matter because there's nothing selling. And they created it and it sold. I mean, it went on for 3 years straight. And each year the line got bigger and bigger. And the fact that it then morphed into Beast Machines, I mean, you basically had 5 years of what is called the Beast Generation. And Takara, you know, back then it was just Takara. They adopted Beast Wars on their own, and they released two Beast Wars exclusive series of their own. You know, it proved once again that Transformers was a financially viable product. And sure, eventually we went back to cars and planes and everything, and then came the Unicron trilogy and so on. Yeah, we got there eventually. But if Beast Wars hadn't proved to the people in finance who were calculating the bottom line that, yes, we could invest this much in tooling and animation and make this much profit, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. We wouldn't be talking about Transformers right now. There wouldn't be a live-action film series for us to speak about. I am absolutely convinced, because I lived through that era, that without Beast Wars, none of what we have right now would exist. And that's partly why it's such, I have so much love for it, because it saved the line that I love.
Beast Wars and Beast Machines, I wasn't able to watch the first couple seasons of Wars, mm-hmm. but I caught the third season and then Beast Machines. That's the stuff that got me into, you know, where I actually gave a shit about anything related to the mythos form. You know, I watched the old G1 cartoon and I had a few of them. But you know, they were basically trinkets, you know, just cool little trinket toy.
Right.
Beast Wars and Beast Machines, man. And Beast Machines, when I was talking with this a couple of episodes ago with the other guys, man, when you got a show where the hero, the main character, is time-traveling alien robot gorilla who meditates on the meaning of life and identity itself.
Right.
Child's cartoon. That's just fucking mind-blowing and cool. You know, just to think about what's going on and just the setup of that show. I know that there were issues with the execution of it and that there were, you know, it clashed a bit with the canon set up by G1 and stuff. Man, that shit was cool.
Yeah, and so, you know, the thing about Transformers as a whole, right, is now we're at this point where there are a dozen or so possible entry points you may have had into the mythos, right? You may have started with Generation 1. You could have started with Beast Wars. I know people that think Beast Machines is a 10 times better show than Beast Wars because they never watched Beast Wars. They only started with Beast Machines. then, and, you know, this is what really, like, you know, like before when I said, I heard someone who said, oh, I started with Transformers Prime. I mean, that's for me, mind-blowing, right? So everyone's
entry point. Did your mom know you're on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's entry point really colors their perception of what Transformers should be and, you know, pushes it going forward. And, I, you know, it's interesting because what I see now is you've got a whole bunch of fans who started around the mid-2000s to now who are now retroactively going back because of Generations, Titans Return and so on, and saying, oh, who's this, you know, who's this hardhead guy or who's Chrome Dome or who's whatever, you know, where did this guy come from? I'm seeing a lot of questions like that on the Transformers Facebook groups, and, you know, people will link to the wiki or whatever, and they'll say, oh, that's interesting, you know, what episode should I watch to see this character? So there's this whole generation, or generations really, of fans who are going back to rediscover things that some of us just take for granted, like this is the thing we grew up with. And I think that's a wonderful thing, and it speaks very well of the brand that it can even generate that kind of reverse interest in terms of chronology.
You don't see that with a lot of, I can't think of any other line where that's really prevalent.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Maybe to some extent, well, I'll take that back. Star Wars is probably like that, but aside from that, you know, there just isn't anything that has been that virulent, I think is the best word for how Transformers has been through the last few decades, and just the fact that it, you know, it started somewhere else. I mean, it's not a U.S. property originally, but it came over here and it really latched on and people really got into it. I mean, you don't see that either. I can't think of anything else that we got from somewhere else that took off like that. I mean, Robotech did to a certain degree, and I'm sorry, my puppy's got the crazies. She's running around like a nut. But I can't think of anything else like that that came from outside the U.S. and has had such an impact.
Right. And you know, like you mentioned, we were talking about, you know, we mentioned Doctor Who before, right? I mean, a lot of people got into modern Doctor Who, you know, around what, the Eccleston one,
Doctor Who,
you know, that era. How many of those people who only watched that and then went forward with Tennant and so on, how many of them have actually gone back and watched Baker?
Well, that's my first Doctor.
You know, right, it's your first Doctor, but there's a legion of people out there
right,
who I guarantee you have never gone back, probably also don't pick up all those radio plays they do. Right, yes. In the UK.
Yeah.
You know,
I've never heard one of those.
Well, and yeah, I know that there's people that, you know, pick that up during Matt Smith and won't go back and watch
right.
David Tennant or Christopher Eccleston too. So.
Right. It's interesting. Or, like, you know, another example, you know, you have the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, you know, got three of them now in the can, right?
Yes.
That have come out. But how many people who went there truly enjoyed it but weren't really fans of the original series, any of them, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, any of them, they just, you know, their introduction to Star Trek was J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. Well, how many of them went back and said, I'm going to go watch the entire original series now?
See, and that's a touchy, you know, subject for me, because I cannot absolutely detest the J.J. Abrams' treatment mm-hmm. of Star Trek. Just, I've seen the first two, and I absolutely refuse to watch the third one, so.
Here's the sad part. If you don't like the treatment it got in the first two, you actually will love Beyond.
Really?
Because this is how I felt walking out of Beyond. Beyond is the most Star Trek of the three.
I love those movies, and Beyond was the first one's my favorite, but Beyond is an amazing tribute to the legacy of Star Trek.
I will tell you why. It's because they let Peg write on it.
Yeah, a fan wrote it.
Yeah, a fan wrote it. And you will pick up not just lines that come straight out from the original series, but, you know what? I'll spoil a scene for you because it's not a big deal. No. There's a scene where the Enterprise comes into a space dock. And as it's coming in, some people look up at it, and they kind of look up at it like with, you know, these looks of like glee on their faces, right? And I'm like, oh my God, that's the moment from Star Trek III,
right,
when Damaged Enterprise pulls into Space Dock. And he just replicated that moment on a larger scale.
Nice.
There is another scene where just it's McCoy and Spock bantering. And first of all, though, Quinto and Urban, to me, like, they just nail it every time they're in a scene together.
Urban channels DeForest Kelly. Yeah. On a scary level.
Yeah, and he says a line that DeForest Kelly had said, and I'm like, damn, he must have watched the episode, because he nailed it. And so there's a lot of that love there. It is the first one I felt that wasn't like trying to be its own thing, man, and not reference the original too much. To me, Beyond was the first one where it's like, no, we're going to go be a Trek film. We're going to be proud of being a Trek.
I love the 2009 movie because
They killed Winona Ryder. That was the best thing in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it because it was just, we'd just never seen Star Trek go balls out crazy like that. Like, it's just, it reinvented the mythos, but I think there was enough true Trek geekdom, that they threw into it, to make the appeal to diehard fans, going off in its own direction.
No.
But I thought Into Darkness, it was a misstep. It really just
Star Trek Into Darkness.
That's not what
they
needed to do for the sequel.
Forget Star Trek for a second. Let's just look at it as a story. It makes no sense.
Yes.
Nope. It was the entire time I watched it, and I've seen it a few times now. I have it on Vudu, and I've watched it a few times. I didn't see it in the theater. I got the sense that it was two scripts that they combined into one movie, and it was a bizarre direction to take. Both scripts were a strange, the Wrath of Khan ripoff tribute, whatever they called it, was not the right way to go anyways, but the other story that they had going with the USS Vengeance and whatever, I'm just like, this is not Trek. This is just, this doesn't belong in here. And to combine the two into one movie, there's no cohesion at all. If it wasn't for the strength of the cast playing the same characters that they played so well,
right,
in the previous movie, I think it would have fallen apart altogether, because this is just crazy. Like, this was all the wrong decisions. And yeah. I don't know if it's because, again, it was one of those things where Abrams started off with a great thing and then didn't know what to do with it, or if it was other people that working on it that you know, that also victimized it like that. But it was strange. It was so weird, because 09 was such a high, and then Into Darkness was just, yeah, right, it was a mess. It was just like, this is one half-baked script combined with another half-baked script, and the fact is, they just did not, I don't know, they didn't mix well. But then, Beyond comes out and totally flips the switch.
Yeah.
I mean, it had everything that I loved about 09, and then it really just Star Trekked the hell out of it.
It's very traditional Trek formula, right? Teaser at the beginning that sets up kind of the plot, right?
And it's funny, too.
And
that teaser
was funny. Yeah. Cheezer was great. Aliens we haven't met before, right? That kind of stuff. Strange planet, right? With strange stuff on it. I'm trying not to be spoilery here now. Our heroes are seemingly overwhelmed, and some of them are imprisoned, right? Very classic Trek.
Yeah.
Very.
Our heroes are put in a technologically very bad situation, and they have to figure out how to get out of it through teamwork. And everyone's kind of stumbling along until our intrepid crew is all together again, and that's when they're truly at their best when they're together. I mean, all that to me was missing from Into Darkness.
Well, and it also did something. See, I geeked out every time 09 would reference Enterprise because as an early supporter of that show, I liked what it added to the mythos, but I always got a little bit of glee every time 09 would reference it, you know, Admiral Archer and the dog and, you know, various things from that, but Into Darkness sort of, it drops some plot lines and it was strange, but then Beyond comes in and not only makes reference, but it actually ties into Enterprise. Like, you actually, right. You see this lost crew, this crew from this lost ship in those uniforms, and you actually, it makes you fully realize how the timeline was identical right up until the Narada comes out the anomaly in the first one, and that's when it changes the timeline. But I love that this continued that and went even bigger. It's true. It's the most Trek of all of it. It doesn't disregard any of it, and it's awesome. And I really hope, despite its financial difficulties, they did a terrible job marketing that movie.
Oh God, did they? Yeah.
For a movie that was for general audiences and Trek fans, they should have gone, what in the hell is that?
You're pissing off Brian with all this praise.
That's my puppy running around like crazy.
Oh, my God. It sounded like somebody had a demon in the room with them.
We do.
It was like sputtering or something. I was waiting for incantation.
She's doing laps around the house.
That's funny.
She's just absolutely off a rocker.
But I hope, despite the fact, I mean, because it made money, but not nearly what they were hoping for. Well, that's Paramount's fault. But I really hope that they get the chance to do a fourth movie, because I want to see the magic that I want to see the magic that they've now established with Beyond. I want them to give it another chance to do another movie to wow us.
Yeah, I agree. And Brian, I mean, I know, look, believe me, I know people who hate the J.J. Abrams verse with a passion, so yeah. I get your reticence.
See, I love them, but I understand it too. Yeah. I do. I get it.
What I would do if you ever, like, just wanted to get it on Redbox or something, or Netflix it or something, you know, look at it as not, I mean,
a standalone. Tough,
yeah, don't forget the last two movies and just say this is an alt universe where, you know, after a certain time in the early 20th century, technology just diverged. So the technology looks different, but that's it. And then, you know, Vulcan blew up. Well, okay, you're going to have to remember that.
Right.
But other than that, you can kind of remember everything else and then move forward. Because it's really, what's nice is it doesn't rely on the previous movies at all. It just kind of plays out like, here's a Trek adventure. I would dare say, I don't know if JD would agree with me on this, with very minor tweaks, you could have made this script with the original cast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you actually take, because he's right, it doesn't rely on the previous two movies. It does. It continues what they sort of like. It does extrapolate on it, but if it doesn't rely on it, so yes. If you took all the Kelvin timeline stuff out of it, and you did make it, with the same cast, if they were gonna treat it as an extension of the original series itself, yes, I think it would work. But then this thing, even, and you know what, I'm gonna spoil something here. When Kirk finds that picture of the original crew.
You mean Spock?
From Star Trek VI. When Spock, he sees that picture of the original cast in their red Star Trek movie uniforms, it really just drives home the passion for Trek that this movie had behind it. But even before that point, other than the Vulcan thing, it really does. It feels like, oh, let's put it this way. It's a way more appropriate Trek movie than the last two TNG movies. And because those, you know what? I can defend a lot of Trek. I cannot defend those two. They're garbage. They're pure garbage. They're awful.
Nemesis, so, and which one?
Insurrection. It sort of felt like one of those. You know how they had those episodes of TNG that felt so inconsequential that you forget about them after you watched it. Mm-hmm. Well, it took that, gave it a movie budget, made it twice as long, and it still had all the meaning of stupid episodes that just, you know, when you're doing a series rewatch, you can skip and, you know, not miss anything. So they were terrible. But if they had paid tribute, they tried to pay tribute to Star Trek the same way Beyond did, they would have been runaway successes, but
yeah.
Instead they were horseshit. So,
yeah. So that's our 15-minute rant on Beyond and why you should watch it.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a Trek fan, you should watch it because it really.
I'll consider it.
It.
I'll wait for it to come on Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if you've got nothing else to watch and it's free, or, you know, it's relatively cheap, like a buck or something for you to see, yeah, you know, definitely worth a look. I will tell you, I saw it in the theater twice, and then I watched it with my mother, who, you know, she loves Trek, of course, still. So, and she really, I'll tell you this, and this I'm not saying this to change your mind. I'm actually saying this more because it's a cool story. My mom didn't get the last two movies. Like, she saw them. But she didn't understand them, and they bored her to death. Like, she saw 2009, fell asleep.
I love your mother.
Remember, she grew up with the original, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't know your mother, but I love her.
We saw Into Darkness, and the problem with Into Darkness is there's a lot of plot points that don't make sense.
Yes.
Nope.
So you're spending half your time going, why did that happen? And she did that, but she verbalizes it. So she's saying to me, as we watch it on DVD, she's going, I don't understand. And I said, I think I understand, but I'll have to rewatch it later or read up on it and tell you why I think that happened. You know, and right. So there was a lot of that during Into Darkness. Beyond, she just sat there with a grin on her face the entire time.
Huh.
And she didn't ask me one question. She just watched it and was like, that was great.
Well, I just said Simon Pegg.
So I said, really? You don't have any questions? Nothing? And she's like, no, that was really fun.
Huh.
Can
you
I keep
what?
The disc? No, she actually then asked, can I keep the disc? And I said, yeah, sure.
If you were looking for a Star Trek fan, or if you were looking for a Star Trek movie to show somebody who's never watched Star Trek before, and you sort of wanted to give them a sense of, like sort of an example of what Star Trek can be, I would recommend that because it's
kind
it's
of funny
because
we were at my in-laws last weekend. We were watching, I guess it was here this weekend. We were watching Star Trek the Motion Picture, and my mom had never seen that before, and she's like, "What is this?"
Oh God!
Yeah.
I mean,
what are
I'm
they wearing?
Trek,
what are they doing? What is going on here?
I am a Trekkie. I am a Trekker. Whatever the hell you want to call it, but that movie, and it's not because it's slow. It's just so half the characters aren't even the same characters.
No.
It's just so weird. It was all right. Let's put it this way: it's the only time I dislike DeForest Kelly. As McCoy because I'm just like, this is just not. I mean, I love the hippie beard and, oh, isn't that and the awesome? Medallion. Amazing.
The jumpsuit.
But, yeah, I mean, but it was, the characters were just so off.
I think what they were trying to do is just capitalize on the success of Star Wars because that came out just after That's Star right. Wars came out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't. It was just. It was. Oh yeah, it's long. It's boring. And you know what? It's gotten the nickname of the motionless picture for a reason.
Yes.
But even if it wasn't boring, it would still just not feel like. Let's put it this way: it's the movie that you can skip and go to Star Trek II, and you didn't miss anything.
Yep.
It's a tough one to watch.
I love it. It's visually a gorgeous movie.
Only one, I love it because it's the only one that's actual science fiction movie.
Well, I think they're all sci-fi in their own way, but I get what you're saying. It's almost like a sci-fi novel that would have come out of that era.
You mean it's sort of like an Arthur C. Clarke type?
Right, right. Yeah.
That's what they were really going for, not Star Wars. They were trying to go for 2001.
Yeah, exactly. They put the movie out because they were trying to capitalize on the sci-fi craze, but it isn't like they were in any way sort of trying to do a Star Wars because...
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, but yeah, they were definitely going for Arthur C. Clarke and... it was definitely a cerebral... sci-fi movie, and it was definitely, let's put it this way, the soundtrack was amazing, I'm glad that they used some of that for TNG, because that is, I am a person that when I am watching a movie, very rarely do I actually notice a score, unless it's particularly integral to what's happening on the screen, like it's a theme that really fits what's going on and adds to it. It a lot of times, like the background score or whatever, I don't notice it most of the time, but there are occasional movies where I'll watch and the score is so great and so grand that it actually makes me want to listen for the movie, the music, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Absolutely agree. And I gotta say, I don't disagree with some of the things you said about the movie, but I will tell you that shot where Scotty is, that sequence rather, where Scotty is taking Kirk on kind of a tour of the Enterprise exterior, I love that scene. The music, the shots of the Enterprise, that scene is amazing to me.
Now that scene with Spock in the spacesuit, not so much. I see what they were going for, but. Move it along. And Decker was a douchebag. And Ilea, I don't even know what the fuck. And you know what? It was like the new characters that they put in there were meaningless. And that scene with the transporter accident, not only was it unnecessary, but it was very un-Trek-like. And I'm glad they never did anything like it again because, ew. But it was just so, I don't know. You should really watch Beyond. Just because it's really, it's the new Trek movie for Trek fans. I don't know.
We'll see. And I'm not going to watch it alone, that's for sure. So the wife
to that. Absolutely, sit down with someone and enjoy it.
No,
yeah.
But I would consider it, that's what
said. Yeah, so... We'll wait for it to come on Netflix or Redbox or something.
No, I mean I personally had sworn after Into Darkness, never again. They're not.
No, don't,
going
don't,
to
yeah, don't.
You,
don't,
to watch
you know what?
One. But,
I've
I mean,
seen
it. Sounds like it's maybe worthwhile.
Yeah, I've seen Into Darkness a couple times, but that's because that's always me giving it a chance to. Because there's moments in that movie that are great. There's scenes that are okay, but it's not. Weird. I loved 09, and then I'm watching this. I'm like, this is just not the sequel it should have been. But,
right.
Well, we watched Force Awakens this weekend because my mom hadn't seen it yet either. And, you know, that's the first thing Emily said that after the movie got over. She's like, And that's what I don't get it. It's like, clearly J.J. Abrams can produce a decent science fiction movie, so what the fuck with Star Wars? Or Star Trek?
Yeah, and that's definitely a subject for debate.
My understanding is that it's not so much Abrams. What his real difficulty is selecting good script.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He didn't write either of those Star Trek movies. Berto Orsi, most one of the guys that's, I think, now involved with the Hasbro Shared Cinematic Universe.
Yep.
That guy, Berto Orsi, look his name up on IMDb, and it's just a slew of shit top to bottom.
Well, he was... Ben, is he the one that was supposed
nice
to direct the third Star Trek movie, or was it the other guy? I don't know. One of them was supposed to direct it, and then...
It might have been Orsi. I don't recall.
Announced when they greenlit the third movie, he was announced as the director, and there was groans from one end of the internet to the other.
Well, because you can't announce somebody like that for a movie as big as Star Trek who's never directed a movie before.
Yeah.
One, and then for two, I said, I love 09. I don't know why. You know, I can't pinpoint one reason why. I loved it. But then that same magic didn't carry over to the sequel. So why would they even entertain the idea of giving one of those two guys the director reins? It was just so strange.
It's and we can't pretend to know what all the backroom shenanigans are.
It struck me as they didn't know who should direct it. They didn't have... It was like he volunteered to direct it because they didn't have anybody else in mind.
I think given that, they wound up with a good director. I like Lin's work on the Fast and Furious franchise, and I think he did a stellar job on
VR. When they announced Justin Lin would direct the next Star Trek movie, and I remember reading some belly aching about, oh, it's just going to be a race car movie in space. Really? Really? You really think that they were going to pick a director that wouldn't be capable to direct it? I'm like, really?
I'm a big fan of the Fast and Furious franchise because I think it's like live action cartoons. if you were to watch Tokyo Drift with the director's commentary on, it's basically just Lin talking about the movie. He really talks about how much he cares and his thought process and everything. And a lot of it is just, if he's going to give that much thought into this, car racing movie, imagine how much thought he would give into a Trek movie. And it shows. It's on the screen.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he grew up a Star Trek fan, and you can see that. But no, I just remember the screaming fanboys that were bitching about how he was the wrong choice. And I'm like, I don't know. I guess I'm always just of the belief, give it a fucking chance. If you see it and it sucks, well, then it sucks. But just when they make an announcement like that, stop automatically assuming that everything about it is going to suck. Because you know what? It might not. Brian and I often laugh about how I had never heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy before the movie was announced. I had never heard of it, but when it came out, I think it's in my top five of the Marvel movies. In fact, it might be in my top four. I don't know, but yeah, I'd never heard of it. But anyways, I think Ben, we have wasted way more of your time than
we're almost at 2.5 hours here.
Wait.
Peanut Gallery speaking up.
We've barely even touched the important question. Ben, do you customize at all?
I do not, no. I leave that to my more talented friends.
B, if you had to pick one Transformer toy out of your entire collection,
I've answered this one before. It's my Generation 1 Fortress Maximus.
Woof.
Yeah, that would qualify.
Yeah.
Let me tell you why. I'll tell you why, because I got it. You see, we should do that. If we do this again, just you guys just ask me Transformers questions, and I'll tell you them, and I'll give you quite stories behind them. So Fortress Maximus, as you guys know, the most expensive of the Generation 1 Transformers released at that time. There were more expensive ones later. And he was about, you know, 80-something odd dollars at Toys R Us. And we're talking 1987 dollars here, so that was a lot of money.
Well, yeah, it was like the USS flag. It cost like $80. It was like,
exactly.
In today's money, that's like $300.
Yep. So obviously my parents couldn't afford it. You know, my mom raised me, a single mom. She couldn't afford it. My family just didn't make enough. You know, lower middle class family. We didn't have to scratch for that. So a couple years went by. It was about 89, and I got a summer job. You know, and it was cash under the table, right? I helped this guy renovate his house, you know, painting and stuff like that. And, you know, I made good money. So I said to my friend, who was also a collector, I said, do you know anywhere where they still have a Fortress Maximus? Because at that time, Toys R Us had gotten rid of them. All the big stores had gotten rid of them. And he said, I know this place in Brooklyn, this mom and pop toy store. They still have one, and no one's touched it. It's just gathering dust.
Whoa.
But they want $125 for it. Now, this is $125 bucks in 1989 money, okay? So still not cheap. And I said, do they have layaway? Because back then, you could do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's like, they have layaway. I'll take you there, you know, this weekend. So we go. I went there. I said, I want to buy that from you. It's been sitting there for 2 years. You know, I want to put it on layaway. Are you okay with that? The guy was like, can you put down $25 today? I said, here. So what I did for the rest of the summer was, you know, I would work. I'd get paid at the end of the week. On the weekend, Saturday morning, I'd take the train over there for like 30 minutes, go to the guy, say, here's my receipt, here's another 20, and I just kept paying it off over the summer. And at the end of the summer, my friend helped drive it back to my house, and, you know, there it was. There's my Fortress Maximus.
That's amazing to even think that you could do that. Like, I can't even conceive of a store now even a mom-and-pop, one-location store. I can't imagine them giving anybody the benefit of the doubt like that. Because it would be a matter of, oh, well, he put some money down. Well, I'm just going to refund it because this person came in to buy it.
Yeah.
That's such an alien idea because it's just you can't picture that. Awesome.
You know, so there's that. There's the whole fact that I worked the whole summer, you know, to earn this thing.
I would say that's got a lot of meaning. That's true passion. So.
Yeah, and he's an incredible toy. To this day, I consider him one of the best Transformers ever made. So, you know, you take all that together, he's my absolute favorite. The last time I was asked this question, it was, if you were stranded on a desert island, you could only have one Transformer with you, which would you bring? And that's the one.
Well, hey, that's a good choice, I think. It's big enough. Boy, that could keep you busy.
Yeah, but James, that was a good question. I liked it.
One more question.
Yeah, go for it.
And when we have an official Star Trek themed episode, can we invite your mom on?
She wouldn't be able to do it, but I could do it.
Well, Jim, that's creepy. But
why? Oh no, we've got girls on the podcast.
No,
oh my God. So creepy.
No, it sounds like you want to hit on Ben's mom. That's not right, Stifler. Well, I was going to say, you could bring her on with you. it's just so cool to picture. See, it's funny because I'm a geek. My kids will know me as a geek, but my dad watched Star Trek. But he doesn't have hobbies. He doesn't geek about anything. And my mother at all. I mean, when my mother was younger, I think there were things that she loved. But as she's gotten older, there is no geek at all in either of them, so I can't imagine what it'd be like to grow up with a parent that was a geek. I mean, that's
right,
so
right.
Cool. Oh my God, that's just if only.
All right, and with that, we are at 2.5 hours, so I think we will call that a night.
Yeah, Ben, thank you for coming. I'm sorry we kept you this long. You are absolutely welcome back on the show. I'd love to do a sequel to this episode. Please plug your Twitter, plug, you know, all the ways to get in contact with you, your website, and, you know, tell the listeners where they can find you.
Sure. My website is Ben's World of Transformers. It is at bwtf.com. You can find me also on Facebook at facebook.com/Ben's World TF. And you can find me on Twitter at bwtf_Ben.
All right. And yes, thank you again for coming on. And
thanks for having me, guys. This has been fun.
Yeah, dude, this is great. Because when I asked you, you know, if you've done podcasts, it was more a matter of, are you willing to, or is it one of those things where you know, if you've done them before, which I think vaguely from reading your site, I think I had been aware that you had, but it was just more like, did you have a, you know, is there a certain, you know, sort of criteria, or, you know, were you just open to it? And when you said you would, I'm like, oh, sweet. I'm like, okay, now we're getting there. Transformer spotlight episode that I've been dreaming of doing. I'm like, this guy, you can't pick a better qualified person, because, and Brian's right, we wanted to do this for a while, and I've had a devil of a time trying to get anybody that would, you know, sort of, and then I was reading your website one day, and I just thought, wait a minute, why don't I just, you know, ask him? So I've been so excited to have you on the show, just because I don't, in my real life, I do know other Joe fans that I can talk to, but I don't, I had one friend that was a big fan of Transformers, but there was shit and a falling out and whatever, but you know, fun? I don't know anybody else that can, so this is great. I'm honored to have you on the show, so thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, guys, and look, there's plenty of other fans out there, you know, who are much more knowledgeable than me, but I'm happy to be on, happy to chat about sci-fi, geekdom, you know? I mean, if you want, next time, if we do this again, just, you know, feel free to just have a bunch of questions, and we could just do, like, rapid fire. You can just throw them at me.
Right on.
Ooh, sweet.
But that requires pre-planning, and we're not really good at that sort of thing.
Yeah, but the first time Jim was on the show, he proved that if he gets prepared for a show, man, he can make Brian and I look like complete jackasses, because, in fact, somebody, my friend of mine who encouraged us to start this podcast back up, he's like, he was trying to get guests for us one day. He's like, do you have a planned topic? I'm like, Chad, have you listened to our show? You know we don't have a planned topic. We don't even have a format. We're ill-prepared. Well, you know what? We will. Well, next time we have you on the show, Brian and I will get some initiative, and we'll prepare something, you know, ahead of time.
Let's do it. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Just drop me a line. You know how to get to me.
Yeah, all right. Absolutely. All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Have a great night, guys.
And thank you for listening to General Geekery once again. Tune in next time when we talk about who knows what.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. Good night, folks.